Good morning, everyone. We're going to go ahead and open up the Senate Judiciary Committee. Today we have three bills that are up for public hearings and then some possible work sessions as well. What we're going to do, because of the numbers of individuals that are here, some of that are members that need to give testimony, then move forward into their rest of their day, we're going to start off with Senate Bill 1531. And Bill, can you give us an overview, please?
Sure. Members of the committee, Senate Bill 1531 comes to me from Senator Hansel Monroe. It specifies the governing body of city or county may regulate or restrict the operation of medical marijuana facilities. Mr. Chairman, as a committee, you have basically two sets of amendments before you, the dash 3 and the dash 4. And the dash 3 relate to elementary schools or it inserts preschool within the prohibition within distances, and then it talks to the child-resistant packaging of medical food containing marijuana in the packaging. The Second Amendment, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, basically clarifies the language that you will find in Section 2. And I believe they both come from Mr. Beauvais.
All right. Okay, so where's our schedule, people? Witness schedule.
Sign-up sheets.
And then while they're getting sign-up sheets, so I know who else is here, why don't we go ahead and Senator Hansel and Senator Monroe, want you to, and, oh, Senator Starr, sorry, I didn't see in the second row. So, gentlemen, whoever would like to get started, as you know, the routine, name, rank, serial number, and testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Rod Monroe, Senate District 24. Thank you for taking us early. I have a critical meeting at 8:30 that I have to chair, so this will be very helpful. Senate Bill 1531 is a local control bill. It simply gives cities and counties the necessary authority to regulate marijuana dispensaries, to control where they will be or if they will be at all within their particular city, and gives them the necessary authority. You know, city councilors, mayors, and county commissioners are elected, and they're elected locally by the local people, and they often know best what's good for their particular community. I've heard Jeff say that many times. And so what this bill does is it gives them, those locally elected officials, the necessary responsibility for regulating marijuana dispensaries. And I would urge your support to move this bill on down.
Thank you.
Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bill Hansel, State Senator from District 29. As one of the chief sponsors of Senate Bill 1531, I am here today to urge the passage of this bill along with the Dash 3 and Dash 4 amendments. Prior to being elected to the State Senate, I had the privilege of serving as a Umatilla County Commissioner for 30 years. During these three decades, I came to clearly understand the partnership between the state and local governments. I learned from experience that one-size cookie-cutter approach is not always the best way to solve public policy issues. Better policy occurs when we empower, where appropriate, local governments with the tools to carry out the legislation we pass that affects them. This is local control, and local control and public safety is at the heart of Senate Bill 1531. It was not fair to our local government partners when we, as the state legislature, passed House Bill 3460 this past session, because in effect we created the most unregulated marijuana dispensary program in the country, and we did not give local governments clear authority to regulate those dispensaries. It grieves me when I read of a fellow legislator in the Oregonian express opposition to local control, and on this year issue stating cities such as Medford will get over it in time. Local control gives local governments the responsibility to zone and site the dispensaries. It gives cities and counties the opportunity to do it thoughtfully. I understand that the City of Ashland has already amended their ordinances to facilitate them. Senate Bill 1531 would not impair Ashland or any other city from doing this. But on the flip side, Senate Bill 1531 would also allow a community to regulate in a different way what Ashland has chosen to do. Local control is the key. Senate Bill 1531 will make this authority clear and avoid unnecessary, costly litigation for our local partners. I want to protect Oregon cities and counties from having to litigate, which most assuredly will happen. Senate Bill 1531 is a bipartisan bill with strong support from the League of Oregon Cities, Association of Oregon Counties, Association of Chiefs of Police, and the Oregon District Attorneys Association. We need to help our local partners, and Senate Bill 1531 gives them the help they need. I urge you to pass Senate Bill 1531. Thank you.
Hi, good morning. For the record, I'm State Senator Bruce Starr, representing the communities of Forest Grove, Cornelius, North Plains, Helvetia, and Hillsboro. Here to testify this morning in support of Senate Bill 1531. I won't repeat the testimony of my colleagues to my right, except to say that I believe that this is an issue that ought to be left to the local cities and counties to regulate. And my city of Hillsboro is in the beginning stages of very closely looking at this possibility, and I believe they ought to have the ability under Oregon law to do that. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd ask that you would support and move Senate Bill 1531 with the amendments forward so that we can have a full vote in the Senate. It has strong support, obviously, from local governments, bipartisan support from legislators, and this is the kind of opportunity that we can have in this short session to move forward in a bipartisan fashion. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you. Questions? First, Senator Roblin, and Senator Cruz, second.
So I am sympathetic to local control. It's something that I think our local elected officials have the right to be engaged in. However, I don't see us regulating pharmacies and other outlets for drugs in our communities. There's a lot of regulations around them, but I don't see our local communities getting into deciding a lot of that. And, you know, we heard strong testimony last session from some service people. I know of issues with glaucoma and cancer patients, and what you're basically saying is some of those people, if a particular community decides to regulate it out, they would not be able to get a drug that's been prescribed to help them with those diseases. And having had a couple parents go through cancer, having had another parent with glaucoma, those can be debilitating diseases. And now I'm trying to figure out how can I go and find a place for the drug if they decide that they aren't going to have any in the area. That makes me concerned. I'm still balancing it. I want to wait and listen to testimony, but there are Oregon citizens who, for the first time in their lives, are living more productive lives because of the opportunity. And to now say, yes, the opportunity exists, but you're going to have to go maybe miles away. I just, that's my concern. Any comments would be appreciated.
Well, I would just say that people that live anywhere in this state come under the jurisdiction of either a county or a city or both and have the right to elect those county commissioners, those mayors, city council people. And it seems to me that those local campaigns, if the decisions that those people make in terms of dispensaries doesn't meet the needs of the people they represent, then they'll get unelected and somebody else will replace them. And that's the way the political process is supposed to work. And I just contend that those locally elected officials are closer to the people and closer to the needs of their community than the state of Oregon is, than the big state government. So I just think this is a being sensitive to local officials and locally elected people in making decisions that are best for their local community.
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Roblin, all due respect, Senator Roblin, my mother was a pharmacist, and it is regulated by state and federal law, and they fall under a whole lot of various regulations. So my concern is if you're going to compare dispensaries to a highly regulated medical provision through the pharmacies, that further demonstrates to me
that right now they're totally unregulated. We've got to have some regulation.
Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you. Not so much a question as a statement, but if you want to respond, that's fine. And I agree, Senator Hansel, to compare a pharmacy to a dispensary is a bit of a stretch in my mind. But my favorite example is in my community, or my district in the town of Myrtle Creek. There is a high school. It's called South Umpqua High School. And to get to that, you're on Old 99 Road, and there's a road that goes directly to the high school. At that intersection, and it's clearly not within 1,000 feet of a school by any stretch, but at that intersection is a marijuana dispensary where all the kids go every day. And I would guarantee you that if the people, the city fathers of Myrtle Creek, had the opportunity to say that should be located somewhere else, they would. Mm-hmm. They don't have that opportunity now. This would give them the opportunity.
Questions on this end? All right, I have a couple of questions. First of all, I'm going to follow up with Senator Roblin. Has there ever been a time in the history of Oregon that a medicine, a particular medicine, has been regulated at the local level? And then, that's what we're really looking at. I mean, we're taking something that the voters passed in 1998 and said that we are going to classify marijuana as a medicine to be used for that purpose. And what I'm hearing now is that we are basically going to provide for local control to basically say, allow local community to decide what medicines are or aren't going to be able to be dispensed within their jurisdictions?
This is the only medicine, Chair Przanski, that I'm aware of that does not fall under federal regulations of some type. So because it's a state law, the state then, I believe, has the responsibility to regulate. I asked the question, well, why could we not just put it under pharmacies and have it as a medical distribution like every other drug that we have that requires a prescription or a card or something to get? The difficulty is, and I think you'll hear further testimony, is that because it is still on the federal prohibited list of medications, we can't do that through the pharmacies here in Oregon. So it requires some other type of regulation. It's totally unregulated at this point.
Well, I beg to differ, Senator, because right now we actually have a rural advisory committee, the RAC, for the dispensary that actually has completed its work at the end of the 2013 year. The Department of Health is in the process of administering those rules that they are going to actually be taking, I guess, applications for these dispensaries starting the beginning of March. And so we have a set of rules there for regulating at this point. Also, Oregon has classified marijuana for medical purposes as a Schedule II drug, that it does in fact have medical benefits and attributes. And so under our state rights, we have taken the position that marijuana does have medicinal purposes and uses as a Schedule II, and that's how it's going to be determined. I understand and I appreciate the contrary of having the federal government having it scheduled as a Schedule I without any recognition of medical benefits, how that could in fact keep it from being able to be dispensed through a licensed regulated pharmacy that's falling under the Schedule I prohibitions under the federal system. Gentlemen, I don't know if you've seen any legislative council opinions regarding the regulations and the issues as to, let's say, allowing for local control. If not, I'm going to hand to you a set of opinions that I received this last week for you to review. Maybe you want to give us some comment afterwards if you think there's something else you'd like to add. And I'd say the other part is this part about business regulations and zoning. I don't see anything that stops and will prohibit the regulations on a reasonable time, place, and manner, just like any other type of business. But what I'm understanding that some communities want to do is what I think Senator Roblin mentioned, is basically outright ban an approved medicine within the state of Oregon from being able to be distributed at the local level. So, other questions or comments?
Question, Mr. Chair.
Senator Close.
Thank you. Senator Hansel, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seemed to me when we passed the dispensary bill in the regular session 2013 that there was no limit on the amount of product that could be stored there. I believe that pharmacies are limited in what they can store of certain drugs. I don't know if that's true, but I see that as a major difference. Do you have information on that?
I do not, but I believe what you've said is true. Pharmacies are limited.
All right, any other comment?
Mr. Chair, if I just make an additional comment. This is, I appreciate the give and take and the conversation on the issue. But when we passed the bill, we already created within the statute limitations, regulations, saying that we don't want these facilities within a certain amount of distance to schools. There's a reason why we did that. So to say that we're not regulating it at all, we already are. What this does is it allows for additional regulation at the local level to reflect the values in those local communities. And if those locally elected officials' values and what they decide is out of step with their communities will replace them. I don't believe, and I appreciate Senator Roblin's concern about having communities where potentially medical marijuana, it would not be available. But, you know, the state isn't that large where folks wouldn't have the ability to find their medical marijuana in an adjacent community or somewhere in the state. And I guarantee you that the market will take care of that through market forces. And I can see, situations where individuals with medical marijuana cards who happen to live in a community where they can't get it locally, an entrepreneur will find a way to get it to them.
All right, gentlemen, thank you very much for your testimony. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and take the first panel. What I try to do is bring people up in groups of three, since that's how many chairs we have. Sometimes we squeeze a fourth one in there. The first panel is going to be Rob Obett, Kevin Campbell, and Daryl Fuller. And then what I will do at some point, because we have a number of people who want to give testimony, depending on how quickly it goes, we may have to break and open up 1556 to allow for Representative Buckley to give his testimony.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, my name is Rob Bovette. I'm legal counsel for the Association of Oregon Counties. As the chair has noted, back in 1998, Oregonians voted to approve medical marijuana. We were the second state in the nation to do so after California in 1996. As the chair has also noted, we reduced the scheduling of marijuana from Schedule 1 to Schedule 2, so we recognize the medicinal value of marijuana here in the state of Oregon. And I think Senator Roblin poses a very good question, which I would like to answer. And that is, we don't regulate pharmacies at a local level. And I have two answers to that, because why are we treating dispensaries somehow differently? I have a legal answer to that question and a factual answer to that question. My legal answer is this, and it's just a real quick three-step. Of the municipal attorneys that have studied this, including myself, we believe three things. One, House Bill 3460 itself does not preempt local authority to regulate or ban. However, number two, we believe the GMO bill, which was passed in the special session as part of the grand bargain, does in fact, on its face, preempt local authority to regulate or ban dispensaries. But number three, we believe based on the case law, federal law trumps that. So what 1531 is about is avoidance of unnecessary litigation. We're going to have to fight for our right under federal law to regulate or ban these facilities. We know we're going to have those lawsuits, and we believe we're going to win those lawsuits. So 1531 is about avoiding unnecessary litigation. That's my legal answer. Now my factual answer. As I provided in my testimony, I kind of lay out 10, it's my top 10 list, I just created it yesterday, top 10 deficiencies of the current House Bill 3460 and Rules Advisory Committee rules. It is my opinion, and I think my opinion shared actually by many in the marijuana industry, that we are about to roll out next month the most unregulated marijuana dispensary program in the nation. Unlike pharmacies, which are probably the most highly regulated business you can imagine at a federal and a state level, we have an entire ORS chapter dedicated to regulating pharmacies, pharmacists, and pharmacy technicians. We're going to do nothing like that, in stark contrast. And the marijuana industry is basically saying, trust us. We'll roll these things out right. And I will tell you that we have members, I know League of Oregon Cities has members, that are saying, fine, we trust you. We're going to roll these dispensaries out in places like Portland and Eugene and Corvallis and Ashland and a variety of places, and that's fine. But the point is that we have communities, and I think rightfully so, are saying, wow, we're going to roll out the most unregulated marijuana dispensary program in the land. Hold up. We want to pause. We want to say no for now to see how this rolls out in these other communities. And I think that's not only fair, that's righteous. And I think they ought to have that ability, and I think they do as both a legal matter, and they should have it as a factual matter. So that's what 1531 is about. I'll talk real briefly, because I know I'm using up a lot of time, quickly about the Dash 3 and Dash 4 amendments. The Dash 4 amendments are just technical amendments to keep the Oregon Health Authority happy. They kind of supersede the Dash 2s. I want to keep the Oregon Health Authority happy. So if you move this bill, I'd ask you to please move the Dash 4s in as a technical improvement. The Dash 3s address two additional issues that, quite frankly, it won't deal much with my laundry list of 10 problems that I have with this program, but it will address two issues that your colleagues have talked to me about over the past few weeks that they're concerned about. One is the addition of preschools to the list of schools that you have to be 1,000 feet from. That's one issue. The second issue is, so far as I can tell, and I haven't surveyed every single state, but the states I've surveyed, there is at least some basic core regulation of THC-infused products that are attractive to kids. I think we'll be the only state that doesn't even try to regulate those at all. And so the Dash 3 amendments include a provision that gives the OHA authority to regulate those types of products, and I've given you some examples on the backside of my testimony. And with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions. We would strongly urge you to pass Senate Bill 1531, help us avoid unnecessary litigation, and also the Dash 4 and Dash 3 amendments. Thank you.
Chair Przanski and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kevin Campbell. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police. We also come here today to support Senate Bill 1531 with the adoption of the amendments, as Mr. Bovet mentioned them. We obviously play a role as police chiefs with local governments as they're making a wide range of decisions. We provide input, frankly. We provide perspective. But in the end, it's the local officials that are elected by citizens who make the final call. And so in some jurisdictions around the state, dispensaries will be fully recognized and embraced, and in others they will not, based on the sensibilities, challenges, and concerns within each local government. And so we support the clarification in Senate Bill 1531 that they do have the ability to regulate. I do want to briefly mention in the Dash 3 amendments the importance of adding preschools to the list of definitions related to the 1,000-foot rule. We think that's an oversight, obviously. We think it could be corrected easily in the Dash 3 amendments. And also, we're very concerned because we also have seen specific examples of where marketing seems to target youth in the distribution of marijuana or THC-infused products. We think giving the Oregon Health Authority the ability to manage that on some level is important, as in where clearly we have understood there is, and the state has recognized medical value of marijuana, there's also a danger when youth are utilizing THC-infused products. And so the balance is important, and we think the Dash 3 amendments help correct a few of the problems that were just oversights, we believe, in House Bill 3460. With that, Mr. Chair and members, we urge your support of this clarification in Senate Bill 1531, and thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Darrell Fuller on behalf of the Oregon State Sheriff's Association in support of Senate Bill 1531 and the amendments. I want to acknowledge the Chair's comments about not regulating pharmacies at the local level where we do at the state level, but also want to sort of acknowledge that marijuana is an interesting pharmaceutical. We don't treat it like others. We can't put it into a pharmacy. Sheriffs aren't concerned when somebody puts in a pharmacy down the road. They're not worried about increased crime around a new pharmacy. They're not worried about the impact if a new pharmacy is located within 1,000 feet of a preschool. I think we have to acknowledge at the state and local level that while marijuana is a pharmaceutical in the state of Oregon, it's not like other pharmaceuticals, and it needs to be treated differently simply because of the environment that we're in. Sheriffs, along with our partners at the county and the cities and the chiefs, are simply asking for the ability at the local level to have some control over where and how and if these unusual pharmacies for a specific medicine are permitted, and acknowledging the concerns that Senator Roblin's had about people that need access to those, we simply believe that this is an unusual enough pharmacological drug that it needs some additional input from your local partners, and we urge you to support the bill and be happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Senator Denbrough.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions. First, for Mr. Bovet. So let me say, first of all, I'm very sympathetic to Senator Roblin's concern about outright banning of a dispensary in a community. I certainly support the notion of local regulation and zoning decisions, hours of operation, those kinds of things. But to outright ban really seems to me an unusual violation of the votes that happened, where people in Oregon twice said they want medical marijuana. And I'm wondering, are there other examples in which we've had, statewide initiatives that then a local jurisdiction decides to circumvent in this way? I mean, I'm thinking, the analogy I'm thinking of is, we passed a minimum wage bill through the initiative system, which set a minimum wage in a process. Would you want local counties to be able to undercut that? Can you give me, are there other examples that would be comparable to this where the people have spoken?
Mr. Chair, Senator Denbrough, I would actually remind the committee that Oregonians defeated a dispensary measure just a couple years ago. So Oregonians have spoke on this issue. House Bill 3460 was a legislative act, basically in contrast, in contradiction to the will of the voters. But I think I need to step back and let you know that it's my legal opinion, and my legal opinion is shared with basically all the municipal lawyers who I've spoken with that have analyzed this, that believe that cities and counties right now, have the right to ban these facilities based on federal preemption of the GMO bill. And so the point of this bill is to clarify that we don't have to litigate what we believe we already have. So I can't really show you a different precedent for this, because we're dealing with, as Mr. Fuller pointed out, a real anomaly where we have a medicine in Oregon that is federally banned. And that creates all kinds of very interesting things, shall we say. And I don't know how to fix that. There's nothing that this body can pass that will change what Congress has done. But I guess I fundamentally disagree with the notion that we can compare marijuana dispensaries to pharmacies for that same fundamental reason, that we have created, for better or worse, the most unregulated environment for marijuana dispensaries in the nation. And we're asking communities to just trust us. And like I say, many communities are saying, fine, we'll do just that. But I've got a number of other communities that are saying, hold up, I want to watch how this rolls out in some of these other communities that are saying yes. And I think that's fair.
Mr. Chair, a little more on the problem created by the GMO bill. Why not fix the GMO bill if that created a problem?
Chair Pozanski and Senator Denbrough, that's actually what 1531 does. The first words are notwithstanding ORS, and I forget the number off the top of my head. That is the GMO bill. So actually, we do surgically just that. We notwithstand the GMO bill and then lay it out.
But I mean, if I could follow up, I mean, just address that via the GMO bill, irrespective of, you know, the medical marijuana issue. Isn't there a way you could do that and leave this issue alone?
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Dembrough, yeah, I imagine structurally we could do it that way. This was just a very clean, surgical, simple way to not withstand the GMO bill.
Thank you.
Well, let me just follow up on that. I mean, Rob, that seems a little hypocritical in the sense of the GMO basically set a stage and says that local control can't do this, but now we're going to surgically remove something and say now they can on this particular issue?
And Chair Brzezinski, again, it gets back to federal law. I believe they can right now. I think the GMO bill is legally trumped. I think you'll hear from the supporters of the GMO bill that they drafted it in such a broad way that it applies in this circumstance, and that was not their intent. I share that thought. It didn't come up. And I think just to avoid needless litigation, 1531 surgically goes and not withstands that bill.
Well, I'll give you a copy of the opinion I got from LC that seems to differ with your analysis as well as the other municipal attorneys that have weighed in on support of your side, and because it seems to address the same issues that you've raised but comes to a different conclusion. Any other questions?
Yeah, yes. I have one other question for Mr. Campbell. You know, the prohibition on siting near preschools, I wonder if you could explain that a little more. I mean, you know, at first blush, it makes sense. We, you know, we're keeping them away from schools. We should close that loophole and include preschool. But, I mean, I think the purpose of keeping them away from schools was to keep kids from buying or, you know, somehow getting a hold of the product. Is that a concern for preschool kids?
Chair Brzezinski and Senator Dembrough, if it were just preschoolers out purchasing marijuana, no, that would not make a lot of sense. It has a broader level of concern for public safety in terms of the kind of challenges that law enforcement faces around dispensaries. And because it is a valuable commodity, there are issues that come up around dispensaries that we feel school children should be protected from. So it's probably a broader issue than preschoolers actually going into, for instance, or getting near a dispensary for the purposes of acquiring marijuana.
So I guess I need to follow up based on that. First of all, with the preschools, it seems to me as a means with 1,000 feet, you pretty well are going to ban the location of these dispensaries pretty much anywhere within any community that has preschools, because preschools can be located pretty much anywhere. I mean, even in with zoning in residential areas, with conditional use permits, all the other areas. So it just seems to me as a means to, and why 1,000 feet?
Yeah, Rob, do you want to?
Chair Brzezinski, some of the other folks that are probably going to testify on that issue, actually 1,000 feet is in our law right now.
For schools. But I understand
schools,
for
yes.
This is an area that's not been regulated before, and I understand there's some others that says about 100 feet. And so it just seems like why 1,000 feet, it seems to basically cast the net much broader to the point of where you basically would not be able to site these facilities anywhere.
And Chair Brzezinski, I certainly wasn't part of writing 3460, I can assure you. However, I have spoken with people who were. I believe the answer to why the 1,000-foot was put in there was to avoid some of the problems they saw in places like Los Angeles, where there was a massive proliferation of dispensaries on every block, and it created such a blight and a problem that the Los Angeles City Council passed an ordinance banning them all and then brought them back in on a more thoughtful way. So I think the design of that in 3460 was actually thoughtful for a reason, to essentially create separation from each other and from schools such that we wouldn't have a massive proliferation of dispensaries like on every street corner.
And did L.A. or California actually have a 1,000-foot rule for preschools?
Chair Brzezinski, they didn't.
They
didn't have any. Well, it varies from city to city. And so Los Angeles has a whole regulatory scheme to try to have these things roll out in a much more regulated fashion and not so saturated.
Senator Close.
Thank you. This is just sort of a technical question on the Dash 3s. Rob, I assume you were involved in the writing of the Dash 3s. In the first two lines, you're deleting elementary, secondary, or career and inserting preschool or, but it isn't clear whether you're adding back elementary, secondary, or career. Was it your intent that those three would be added back after they've been deleted?
Yeah, Senator Pruszynski, Senator Close, actually that's a legislative council draft because those words, once we make that change, will be surplus and not necessary. Mm-hmm. So it will cover the full range of schools. And so the idea is just simply to add preschools. So the surplus language was removed. A few years ago, I had a bill that would do a similar thing to the criminal statutes, and that had a fiscal and didn't move anywhere. And that was the legislative council draft. I think it works.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Roblin.
I guess my question would be, go back to preschools again. I understand the need, and I think there are opportunities for theft and other kinds of things that create an environment that may not be good. But my understanding is preschools can start up at any time. So if I have a dispensary already located and then I have a preschool move in next door, does the dispensary then have to move because of the bill?
Chair Pruszynski, Senator Roblin, again, I didn't draft 3460, but that's functionally how 3460 reads right now. If a church school moves in next door to a dispensary tomorrow, then OHA will not issue them a license next year because that's the way 3460 is written.
So the answer is yes on the preschool
yes.
one. Because we have a lot more preschools that come and go than we do even church schools. They tend to be around for a long time. So it makes me a little concerned about how often that might in effect a business that was going. So thank you.
All right. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
What I think I'm going to do is go ahead and put this bill in recess right now because I want to go ahead and get Representative Buckley's testimony. I'm looking at the time. So we're going to recess right now on 1531. We are going to open up a public hearing on 1556 for the purpose of taking Representative Buckley's testimony. We'll come back after that. Bill?
Chair, members of the committee, Senator Phil, 1531 would 56. Allow.
56.
Excuse me. 15. Okay. I'm sorry. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the Senate Bill 1556 declares that a person 21 years of age or older legally should be able to process, transfer, produce marijuana. This would be a referral to the voters, Chair, members of the committee, and has a subsequent referral to the Rules Committee.
All right. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Representative Peter Buckley, representing South Jackson County in the legislature. Thank you for your time and consideration today, and thank you for allowing me to testify out of order here, as it were. As you can tell from the testimony on the previous bill and even the rulemaking process for House Bill 3460, it's complex, a complex issue in terms of the role or where marijuana is going to be in Oregon society. And the basis of the bill in front of you today is a referral to let the voters decide simply, are the voters tired of prohibition? Do the voters believe that prohibition of marijuana has done more harm than good? If so, then they will vote yes, that they wish to end prohibition and move in a different direction, a regulated marijuana system, which, as you can tell, is a complicated entity to bring into being. If the voters will if they do make that decision, then it comes back to the legislature for us to take the time necessary to work through these very complex issues of how do you regulate? How do you actually get to a point where I think we all agree on, how do you eliminate the black market in marijuana in the state of Oregon? And I can tell you, representing Jackson County and coming from Southern Oregon, the black market is a scourge. One reason that I felt very strong about regulating the medical marijuana industry is to try to diminish the role of the black market in Southern Oregon. And I would love to see the black market gone from the state of Oregon. It does tremendous damage to our communities. It is something that we need to focus on. And I have to make the point that one reason I support bringing this to the voters is that I believe the voters have seen that decade after decade after decade of prohibition has not worked. The black market is stronger than ever in my part of the state. Prohibition has not ended the black market in Oregon. it continues to grow. If we do, if the voters do decide to legalize and they do decide to regulate, then I believe the legislature is the entity that should take on the responsibility of bringing forth the regulations. Similar to what we're working on with medical marijuana dispensaries, will we be perfect on the first run? No, we won't, because it will be a process, a continuous process of trying to work through what actually happens in a regulated system. There's, I guess, my bottom line premise with any piece of legislation, does it hurt or does it help? Will it help the citizens of Oregon, will it help people of my community if we refer this out to the voters and let them decide? I believe it will help. I believe it will help because I do believe the majority of Oregonians are now moving in a direction where we will have legalized marijuana, and I believe it would help more than hurt to have the legislature be the entity to put those regulations into being in a thoughtful way that brings together law enforcement, that brings together the medical community, that brings together civic leaders to try to figure out what is a legal regulated system for marijuana, what does it look like, how should it operate. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you. Questions for Representative Buckley? Senator Close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Buckley, I just wondered about one of your comments that you wanted to get rid of the black market, which I think we would all agree with. It seems to me, though, with cigarettes, they are legal. We still have a black market. So how do you see that working?
Mr. Chair and Senator Close, will we ever 100% eliminate the black market? I doubt, as your example is well stated, but there is a black market in cigarette. So, but I believe that 99% of Oregon smokers buy their cigarettes from a legal vendor. And I would love to see, in terms of marijuana, thousands of Oregonians use marijuana. And I'm of a generation, I'm 56 years old, I'm of a generation where most of my peers have used marijuana. We've known people all our lives have used marijuana. Again, tens of thousands of Oregonians. I would like to see those Oregonians, since they're going to be using marijuana, and I'm not a marijuana user, but if they are going to be using marijuana, I would like to see them do it in a safe and responsible way through a legal system.
All right. Representative, thank you very much. We're only going to go ahead and put in recess 1556. We're going to reopen the hearing on 1531. Before I call up the next panel, I have some people that are being added to the list. What I need to know, if you could just tell me if you're here in support or against the bill. Christopher Oss. Mr. Oss? No, Mr. Oss. Okay. Sarah Duff. All right, let's go ahead and go with the next panel, and that's going to be Anthony Taylor, Margot Lucas, and Sam Chapman.
Are they on the phone?
On the phone. People might be an overflow.
Maybe an overflow? Okay. All right, so Sam, I met before. You are?
I'm Margot Lucas.
All right, Margot. And let's go ahead. Why don't you go ahead and get started? And
Anthony Taylor.
Mr. Taylor's delayed in another room.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Margot Lucas, and I am the new owner of the Alternative Relief Clinic. This is a business that I have started in anticipation of 3460 being launched here in the state. I just want to first remind everybody that we are talking about medical marijuana here. We are not talking about recreational marijuana. And there's been some good points made. For instance, the gentleman who spoke earlier and talked about high schoolers hanging out outside of a dispensary in one of the cities here in Oregon, I believe the city does have control of that. The new law, that the new regulations that have been passed under 3460 do have that 1,000-foot rule, and we believe that it is the city's authority to correct a problem like that. Children should not be hanging out around outside of a dispensary. But I do want to, you know, make the serious point that we are talking about medical marijuana. This 3460 bill was passed to create safe access for patients. And I would implore all the legislators in the room to really seriously consider the fact that we just passed this law to create safe access and legal access for patients here in the state, and that we would appreciate your support, your continued support. and, you know, to in order to not cut people off of safe access to medical marijuana that their doctors have approved for their use in their particular city. And I'll keep it short, and thank you again.
Thank you, gentlemen. Who wants to go next?
Chair Brzezinski, members, thank you for your time. My name is Sam Chapman. I'm one of the co-authors of House Bill 3460 in its original draft, and have been working with city councils across the state. Most recently, Beaverton City Council last week held a first exploratory hearing on potentially passing regulations at the local level to further regulate House Bill 3460, and I just wanted to bring some of that information to light. I gave brief testimony before their work session to inform them that there's a lot of dispensary owners out there that would like to work with local municipalities in finding regulations that they find sensible in terms of time, place, and manner. Those are built in the 3460. And what I've noticed in talking with these city council members is that many of them are under the impression that there are no regulations in 3460. As to why that's the thought, I'm not sure. So what I've taken upon myself to do is to continue to talk with these people and educate them about the details of House Bill 3460, the regulations that exist now in 3460, the regulations that allow them to regulate time, place, and manner of these facilities. And I received a call from Beaverton City Council member Kate Arnold last night, who just called to inform me that there is going to be another work session today, that they are considering a piece of draft legislation to move forward. And I've been working with Council member Kate Arnold over the last couple of days to put together information for that council. Essentially, a lot of the testimony that was given was somewhat one-sided, and a lot of the fear of the city council came from the thought that crime would be increased around dispensaries. There's actually a lot of really good studies out there, not just anecdotal evidence, which was the majority of what the testimony was given from that county DA, as well as the police chief. And so I think time is what some of these city councils need to really examine this further. The Beaverton City Council has been given, you know, literally weeks. They were not, you know, fully aware of House Bill 3460, you know, a couple of weeks ago. And this is a large issue on their plate that they've now been forced into, you know, somewhat of a corner to make a quick decision on. And I think they feel very uncomfortable about being put in such a situation before they've had enough time to really explore the issue further. I would like to mention one of the quotes that Councilman Arnold said in the Oregonian the other day in reference to the DA and the police chief kind of asserting to the fact that the federal government could come in kind of go after local municipalities. I don't know of one instance in the entire country from all 22 states that have medical marijuana laws or the two states that have adult use marijuana laws where the federal government has come specifically after states or municipalities that have strict regulations around this bill. And so I think it's worth noting that she said, if that's going to happen, they're going to have a lot bigger fish to fry than Beaverton. They've got entire states to deal with. And I couldn't agree with Councilman Arnold more. Another quick thing that I wanted to mention was in terms of, I know I've worked with Rob on a couple of councils in drafting some of the regulations, and Mr. Beauvais had mentioned that the main goal is to avoid lawsuits, which I could not agree with that more. I think the part where we would disagree is how those lawsuits would come about. Essentially, passing 1531 is going to cause more lawsuits than it will save. While I recognize the federal government needs to come around on this issue, the likelihood that they're coming around and intervening with state regulations is counter to what the federal government has recently issued in a Cole memo recently after Colorado and Washington legalized that essentially said, if you have a regulatory structure in place, we have bigger fish to fry. They want to go after, you know, people doing interstate trafficking and drug cartels. They're not going after states that are starting to come around with sensible cannabis regulation. The last part that I'd like to mention was that I've heard a couple of things said today in testimony regarding city council members and their duty to the people that they are elected by, and I wanted to just leave you with the fact that there was no one in opposition at the Beaverton City Council, only people in favor of working with city councils to regulate sensibly moving forward. Thank you for your time.
All right, thank you.
Anthony. Thank you, Chairman Przanski, members of the committee. My name is Anthony Taylor, and I'm the director of Compassionate Oregon. A couple of things. We've talked a little bit here about preschools and putting them, you know, in the bill. Last session, House Bill 3434, put out by or sponsored by Representative Esquivel, did not deal with preschools, except to say that if you're going to cite a methadone clinic, you can't put it near a preschool. I would echo the concerns of everybody else and add that the primary reason preschools have been left off is 4 and 5 year old children are typically under the supervision of an adult. They're dropped off by their parents. They're picked up by their parents. They're not let out of school at 2:30 or 3:30 and just left, you know, on their way home, so they have an opportunity to pass a dispensary that may be in place. So kind of the primary reason we're not dealing with preschools, and I think that's the path that we need to stay on. Week before last, Compassionate Oregon sponsored an open public forum in McMinnville to try and answer questions by local elected officials and the public in general about dispensaries and what's about to happen next month. You know, the thing I've found is most of these local elected officials may have read 3460, but I don't think they've read the rules. And as I've been going through the rules, trying to figure out exactly what is required by the dispensary owners and the PRFs, what OHA is required to, just in outline form, I'm at 4 pages of rules and regulations. I think it is regulated pretty strongly, and I think if the local elected officials get a chance to read through that and find out what's required by the owners of these facilities, I think they'll have a much clearer understanding of how much they are in fact regulated. And in Yamhill County, they had a work session before the county commissioners last Thursday, and The person in charge of the zoning and LCDC oversight in Yamhill County put up a map for everybody to see. And there in Yamhill County, where we have over 1,000 patients, there are 3 small areas that are currently zoned to allow these dispensaries. Every place else, you would have to get a variance and get some kind of ruling for a business to exist in that zone. And that in Yamhill County takes about 4 months. So I think that those LCDC rules and the local zoning are going to be a stumbling block in the opening of some of these. Next is, I just wanted to quickly address the black market. When this bill was originally talked about, it was a bill to access excess, meaning that the amount of marijuana that's being produced by growers for patients, there's always an excess, and the growers are required to dispose of it or give it away. And so that's how the dispensary started originally, is that they were, you know, allowed to compensate and not make any profit. But this bill and these rules provide that avenue for these growers to put this excess out so that patients that can't provide for themselves can get access. And I think that's huge in rerouting the excess. And I think it's huge in bringing, in diminishing the impact that the black market has in this state on that. And then one final thing I'd like to say is that everybody wants to treat marijuana like medicine, and while I agree with that to a certain extent, I would just like to mention that at every turn that the pro-cannabis community has taken to try and get this regulated and some kind of oversight to diminish the black market's impact in Oregon and to provide that access for patients that can't provide them for themselves has been beat back by those that oppose this kind of thing. They haven't sat at the table in good faith and negotiated how to set this up properly, and it's resulted in a number of glitches in the OMA itself, 3460, and the rules. So I'd just like everybody to kind of take a breath and see if we can't, you know, meet somewhere in the middle. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much for coming forward. Our next panel is Scott Winkle, Stephen Bates, and Lou Ogden.
For the record, my name is Scott Winkles, representing the League of Oregon Cities, and I'm appearing in support of this legislation. I'd like to take this opportunity to point out that the League was supportive of House Bill 3460. We felt at the time 3460 was being debated, depending on who you asked, there may have been 250 to 200 dispensaries estimated operating in the state of Oregon in an extra legal manner. There was no regulation. The League felt, and still does, that creating a license and a registry system to introduce some order into that system, those establishments, makes sense. I would also point out that in the League's letter, floor letter that supported the bill, we also pointed out that we found no preemptive language in 3460, and that local governments were still free to impose their own regulation on medical marijuana dispensaries. To the League's chagrin, the legislature is actually well practiced in putting in a preemptive language into legislation. For instance, guns, liquor, numerous tax measures. We know how to do that. Those words simply don't appear in that bill. Absent the GMO bill that was passed during the special session, I don't think we would be here today. With the passage of the GMO bill, as has been testified by attorneys, municipal attorneys don't feel particularly threatened by the outcome of a challenge to a local ordinance banning or regulating a dispensary. We think that the GMO bill creates an opportunity that someone might avail themselves to litigate as a means to try to maybe intimidate a smaller community from imposing a ban. But what we would like to do with this bill is simply preclude that from happening. Let's avoid complicated litigation that would be a protracted process that would be expensive for all parties. But again, the League feels that we're in reasonably good shape legally in defending an ordinance regulating a medical marijuana dispensary. During the negotiations on House Bill 3460 that led to the League's support, I did point out to proponents in those meetings that this would happen, that there would be cities that are going to be hands-off and say, no, we're not comfortable with this. There will be cities that allow it, and there are cities that are allowing it now, and that there were going to be some cities that we're going to pause and take a stop-and-think approach. As you've heard, City of Beaverton, the City of Hillsboro, many others are wishing to ban for now, but they're also thinking about the future and what they would like this regulatory structure to look at. And they want to look at what that federal response is going to be. They want to look at what's happening in other communities in the state, and they're going to look at the states and at the legalization states as well to see how this all rolls out before they are willing to move forward. I think that's a responsible, cautious approach that they should be free to make in conversation with their citizens. I'd also like to point out one more thing about cities and distribution, because I think that came up in how we get medicine to those patients. And what's been absent from these legal opinions that LC has issued is a discussion of the Emerald Steel case, in which a drill press operator had a medical marijuana card, was terminated by their employer, and Bureau of Labor and Industries appealed that to the Supreme Court. And I think if you look at the ramifications of that case on the medical marijuana statute, I think what's left of that of medical marijuana is somewhat limited, in that it's essentially we now have immunity from state prosecution. I think after that case, cities could have regulated the medical marijuana grows in those debt distributions. Not one did. They probably could now. I have never heard of a city, with the exception of one that was concerned about a grow that was going above a fence line that's creating an odor issue. I haven't heard of a city actually wanting to regulate a medical grow. I think they could. They're not. And with that, I'll turn it over to the gentleman to my right.
Lou? Or whoever's next.
Go ahead, Mayor.
Well, thank you. My name is Lou Ogden. I'm the mayor in Tualatin. Chair Brzezinski and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. A lot has been said. I don't really want to repeat everything that's been said, but maybe recap a couple of things that have been said and then share some information, if I could.
That'd be great.
The issue about the voters have spoken and have approved medical marijuana usage, but at the same time, as you've heard, the voters also have spoken and did not approve dispensaries. The issue about local control is one we feel very strongly about in our communities, but really it would be disingenuous for me to talk about local control without talking about the context and the rationale behind that. And so it's already been pointed out that the issue of medical marijuana is complex and is fraught with various sides of the issue. It's fraught with various unintended consequences. There is likely a reason that voters would like to have medical marijuana. There's the issue of compassion. There's the issue of need. There's the issue of folks who are suffering. I don't think anyone wants to stand before that. Senator Roblin, you mentioned your own family, that concern. That is not what we're trying to block. At the same time, there are all the other unintended consequences that perhaps the voters recognized with the distribution methodology. And that notion of medical marijuana dispensaries en masse creates tremendously greater access. The proponents, at least nationally, of medical marijuana dispensaries agree. You know, this would be anecdotal to quote a news person, but there's an article in the Miami Herald who is actually a proponent and who is... in my mind, somewhat demeaning the opponents and the conservatives in government, but he goes on to say, of course there'll be increased access. Of course there'll be increased abuses. Of course there'll be increased negative impacts. Everyone agrees with that. What's unique about medical marijuana is not, it's not penicillin. It's not the typical drugs, although we recognize there's misuse with hydrocodone and other sorts of drugs, but with marijuana, it's much vaster than that. So let me just tell you a couple of things. In Tualatin, the Tualatin High School, we have done a tremendous amount of effort against drugs and alcohol and promoting awareness. We've had success. This is a recent survey, Tualatin High School. 11th graders think there's moderate or great risk in using alcohol. Last year, 65% thought there was moderate or great risk. This year, 77%. We're making progress over time in the same time period. 11th graders who think there is moderate or great risk in smoking marijuana. Last year, 61%. This year, 46%. The message we're telling kids is it's okay. It's okay. And yet, I was at the City Club last week. Congressman Blumenauer, who I've known for 20 years, great respect for, who is a great advocate for moving the federal substance listing from Schedule 1 to Schedule 2, said in his speech he's very concerned about the impact of marijuana on children, on adolescents, on the brain formation. So my point being is that there's no debate that there are adverse problems associated with this. The debate becomes how much access do you want to create? It's that simple. And so I would submit, this has been reported, I can give you the source, but to the point about need, apparently less than 5% of medical marijuana cardholders actually have chronic illnesses. Less than 5% have cancer, glaucoma, those MS, those things. That means that 95% are using it for other purposes, allegedly. I can quote other statistics about how many of those medical marijuana card holders actually use cocaine, have used marijuana before they were 19, use methamphetamines. I'm not, again, degrading or demeaning those people. I'm simply telling you that this is why some cities believe we want the ability to control it, because there are adverse unintended consequences that are broad and expansive and has impacts on our children, has impacts on our community. So yes, that's why scores of cities want to actually ban the ability for these dispensaries, at least at the present time, as has been pointed out, until we sort through more of our abilities to minimize the access in our locales. And yes, because there are folks that have need, the question I guess to hold is it more important for a small number of people who have serious need to be able to have access within blocks of their home, as opposed to maybe driving a few miles to another location? Or is it more important to protect the children, and I don't mean to sound like, you know, a bleeding heart, but protect all of those folks who are adversely impacted by the greater access and the greater negative impacts? That's the balance. And which of those do we want to err on the side of? I would submit that the inconvenience of having driving a little bit further for those small percentage in serious need is an inconvenience. But the impact of having mass access to our children and adults and parents is a greater problem. And that's why we want to have local control.
Thank you. Stephen?
Thank you, Chair Brzezinski. committee members, I'm Stephen Bates. I'm the chair of the Boring Community Planning Organization. November the 15th was the opening day for the Cannabis Club in Boring. Not very many people in Boring were aware what the wellness clinic was. As they have found out what it was, they are starting to ask questions. Last Tuesday night, the Boring Community Planning Organization was actually questioned why there was a cannabis club in Boring and nobody knew about it. Our research basically said, found that the state of Oregon is the one authority that licenses such establishments, but there's no regard for the local citizens at this point in time. Questions were asked last Tuesday night. Why is there a marijuana club next to a family restaurant? It actually shares the same wall. It's part of the same building. Why is there a marijuana club within 1,000 feet of an LDS church that has Boy Scout, Girl Scout, and other such youth ministries? Why was there not notice of such a facility being cited here? Why was there not a hearing so the community could voice their concerns or support for this establishment? We had no answers for them other than the fact that we found out about Senate Bill 1531, which would give Clackamas County — Boring is an unincorporated area in Clackamas County — that would give Clackamas County the ability to take care of these issues that the local people are actually starting to ask as these wellness clinics start to proliferate. Therefore, the Boring Community Planning Organization adopted a position statement in favor of Senate Bill 1531. I did submit my testimony, a written testimony, right, and a copy of that, so I won't take the time of reading the position statement.
I appreciate that. Questions for this panel? All right, one question, Scott, and that is basically, if there was a desire to move forward with something that explicitly says, I already believe that 3460 does allow for reasonable regulations of time, place, and manner, but include that in a 1531, but also not allow it to be outright banned or prohibited, would the League of Cities be comfortable with that?
Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, no, it wouldn't resolve the fundamental issue, which is the, and I think, analysis of that Emerald Steel case is critical.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I got a lot of people want to testify. I just need to move forward. I appreciate the short answer. All right, so on this, we're going to take one more panel of opposition, and that is Becky Strauss, Jeff Sugarman, and Anthony Johnson. Now, I have some others on both sides, but I'm going to be, why don't you three please come up, and then what I'm going to do is go to the other bill because I'm going to get testimony in on it. We are scheduled to only go to 10, and then we may come back and take additional testimony on 1531. And so what I'm going to ask for all of you, you've been before this panel before on various topics, please cut to the chase, summarize, and not regurgitate everything that's already been testified on your positions.
Thank you, Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee. My name is Jeff Sugarman. I was one of the folks who worked on House Bill 3460 during the last session. I want to go back to Senator Roblin's original comment about this is about patients and safe access for patients. That was the gist of the impetus of the law that we crafted for last session. It was about patients, and I think we've kind of lost sight a little bit about that. I also want to reiterate that the Coleman memo produced by the Federal Department of Justice clearly gives states the ability to move forward with strong regulatory systems around medical marijuana, and provided that the states don't violate some of the 8 points that the federal government listed, such as sales to minors and interstate trafficking, et cetera, that they have basically said that they're going to stand down and allow states to go forward with their regulatory systems. But we looked at that Cole memo, and we also looked at some of the other stuff that the federal government has put out, most specifically around drug-free zones. That is where the 1,000-foot rule came from. It's from the federal drug-free zone. And I would also point out that the federal drug-free zone also says that you can't be within 100 feet of a private youth center. There's no mention of preschools in federal drug-free zones. That's the closest designation I can find in there. So clearly the federal government says 100 feet from a private youth facility, and so 1,000 feet from a preschool, I think, would be far too onerous. I'd also like to say, in response to some of the comments about teen usage, the idea of dispensaries is that nobody who's a minor can walk into them. If you don't have your card and you don't have a valid state ID, you cannot even walk into a medical marijuana dispensary, and you certainly can't get access to the medicine that's there. In addition, there's been studies that have shown that teen drug use, teen marijuana use in states that have allowed medical marijuana has actually gone down. The notion that because we allow medical marijuana in our state that teen use has gone up, I think it flies in the face of the research that's out there. In addition, as one of the previous folks mentioned, crime does not increase around medical marijuana facilities. There's a UCLA and a RAND study reports that are out there that show that very clearly, and we'd be glad to provide those to the committee. Finally, the notion that we have somehow some unregulated system out there, I think, is completely wrong, too. I think we have a very strong set of rules and regulations that are going to go into effect on March 3rd when licensing begins. The Oregon Health Authority and the Department of Justice has been very diligent. Many of us who testified today were part of that rulemaking committee. We believe that these are very strong regulations and are going to put Oregon in a very good position moving forward. Finally, I think one of the folks mentioned that if we had allowed cities to ban within the bill itself, that we might not be here today. If the GMO bill hadn't passed, we might not be here today. During the session, we did talk with the League of Oregon Cities and other stakeholders about time, place, and manner regulations, and we were willing to allow that into the bill, provided that they did not also seek a specific ban on those facilities. So I'd say the same thing. If this amendment was about time, place, and manner regulations, I doubt if we would be here today. But the fact that they're trying to ban access to patients who have gone through the process and need that medicine and need safe access to that medicine, that's where we disagree, and that's why we would oppose Senate Bill 1531. Thank you very much, Senator.
Thank you. Who's next?
Anthony, go ahead.
Anthony Johnson, Senator Przanski, Chair Przanski, the rest of members of the committee. Today I'm here to represent the Oregon Cannabis Industry Association. I also sat on the Rules Advisory Committee for House Bill 3460. I'm here to oppose this bill as written. To touch upon some of the things stated, I think that a lot of the fear about medical marijuana facilities and communities is happening because our culture is changing, and this is moving, you know, very quickly for a lot of neighborhoods and communities, and we understand that. I think a similar analogy is the movement towards, you know, marriage equality and same-sex relations, and it makes a lot of people uneasy how fast culture is changing. But I think the statistics show that a lot of these fears are unwarranted and exaggerated. Those within the cannabis industry also want safe neighborhoods, want safe highways, want to keep marijuana out of the hands of children. A lot of the people within the industry have a vested interest to do this, not only for the, you know, the moral sake of, you know, safer communities, but also the fact that we know that a unregulated, out of control program will invite both voter backlash in Oregon, but also federal intervention, and we all want to avoid that. But how we avoid the backlash intervention isn't more prohibition, it's further common sense regulation. So I join Jeff's comments in supporting time, place, and manner, reasonable restrictions to fit the communities, but not an outright prohibition. Outright prohibition will only harm patients, push the problem underground, make patients deal with drug dealers who don't check for cards, don't check for IDs, and that's not what we want. Some of the testimony talked about how communities weren't fearful about crime being associated with other businesses like banks and pharmacies. If you look at the statistics, banks are more likely to get robbed than medical marijuana facilities. Medical marijuana facilities, the crime rate's a bit similar to pharmacies. Highway fatalities actually go down in states that have medical marijuana facilities. Teen use does not skyrocket. We heard a survey about teen...
Anthony, I need you to wrap up.
We've
got another bill to take up.
We heard the survey about teen use and the how their teens' attitudes for marijuana versus alcohol. We've seen success with their beliefs about alcohol, but not marijuana, and that's because of regulation. We need more common sense regulation, not prohibition. So please oppose Senate Bill 1531.
Thank you, Becky.
Good morning, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. Becky Strauss here on behalf of the ACLU of Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. We are in opposition to the bill, and in the interest of time, I'm really just an us too. Most of what I'd like to say has already been said, and we're submitting written testimony, so appreciate your consideration of not moving the bill.
Thank you. Senator Close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one comment, Mr. Johnson. In your testimony, many times you have put government studies have shown, a recent poll shows, Mr. Silverman, you also said that, in the interest of science, I think you need to include references so that we can look at the data, what the sample sizes were. We need to see references.
I will be happy to email the studies and citations to everybody on the committee.
Thank you.
Email them to Mr. Taylor so they can be part of the record and then distribute it through to all members.
Will do.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to recess again on 1531. I have six individuals who are scheduled to want to give testimony on 1531. My plan is to take as much testimony on 1556. I have committee members that will be needing to leave at 10. I will stay to try to capture the rest of the testimony that we have before I conclude, but my members are free to leave as they have other obligations starting at 10. So we're going to recess 1531, reopen 1556, and at this point, I'm going to go ahead and call up Anthony Taylor, Anthony Johnson, and Jeff Sugarman.
Yes, besides, yeah. It's only public hearing so far.
No. I'll take it. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. I'll do the bill.
Yeah. I'll tell you, while y'all are forming up, I'm going to go ahead and recess or just stand at ease right now on 1556. I'm going to open up a work session on 1536 because we have everything ready and I have all my members here. So, Bill, why don't you bring us up to speed for the work session on 1536?
Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1536. Comes to you with the request of the Oregon Judicial Department. We adopted the Dash 2 amendments. The original bill defines public defense provider and clarifies which of the juvenile court records they are allowed to see. And it's a cleanup from Senate Bill 622 from last session. The second part of the bill, the Dash 2 amendments, relates to adoption as a cleanup from Senate Bill 623 from last session. You may remember discussions about someone who was above the age of 18. And it was adopted prior to the effective date to clarify what records they have access to.
All right.
No fiscal, no revenue.
That's what I wanted to know. We took the Dash 2s in, and we now have got official paperwork back saying there's no fiscal or no revenue. Senator Close, would you be so kind to move the bill with the Dash 2s?
All right. Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendment.
No, they're in. We just need to move the bill as amended.
I'm sorry. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1536 as amended by the Dash 2 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Close moves Senate Bill 1536 as amended by the Dash 2s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And on this one here, the chair will carry 1536 on the floor. All right, we'll close the work session on 1536. We're back in public hearing on 1556. And no, we're going to do it. So who's going to start?
Anthony Johnson, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. In this testimony, I represent both New Approach Oregon and the Oregon Cannabis Industry Association, and being real appreciative of members of this legislative body seriously considering ending cannabis prohibition. Like alcohol prohibition before it, marijuana prohibition has only enriched drug cartels and has a myriad of unintended consequences that have severely harmed society. It is time to regulate and tax cannabis similar to how we do our wine and beer industries in this state. And while both New Approach Oregon and the Oregon Cannabis Industry Association would like to see a few more regulatory aspects written down and in the bill, we certainly don't oppose moving this bill forward, and are real appreciative, once again, of the serious talk by ending cannabis prohibition, because it's time to regulate and tax marijuana and generate revenue for the state and create new jobs for the state in a sensible manner. What's happened in Colorado has shown that the sky doesn't fall when you legalize cannabis commerce. They've generated millions of dollars in revenue, and after a first month, granted it's only a month, but voters in Colorado are even more supportive today, polling shows, than they were when they voted the law in. So I appreciate you moving this bill forward, and appreciate your time. Thank you.
Jeff?
Senator Przanski, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Sugarman, representing New Economy Consulting. I think the real question with this bill is what role the legislature wants to take in the eventual legalization, taxation, and control over adult use of marijuana. There are a number of initiatives out there. We know that year after year or cycle after cycle, we're going to get an initiative to legalize marijuana. The one that New Approach Oregon is working on is actually an excellent piece of legislation or an excellent initiative. It's very complete and very thorough, but it still does not give the legislature the control that it might want as this issue moves forward. So I would support the legislative referral and the subsequent work that the legislature would do in the 2015 session in the hope that you would pass this bill out today. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Questions from the panel? All right, thank you very much. Our next individuals will be Doug Harkerold, Daryl Fuller, and I believe it's Madison Hatas. If I think it's a T-A-S. Doug, you want to go ahead and get started?
Sure. Chair Przanski, members of the committee, my name is Doug Harkelrode. For the record, I'm the retired Lane County District Attorney. I'm the Executive Director for the Oregon District Attorneys Association. I appear in that capacity today. I am also the Senior Policy Advisor for the Oregon Anti-Crime Alliance. The most important thing I'm going to tell you today is that the Oregon District Attorneys Association, probably not surprisingly, but is opposed to Senate Bill 1556, and they are also opposed to the legalization of the recreational use of marijuana. They're opposed because of the business therein, as elected prosecutors, knowing the adverse consequences from the use of marijuana. And there is a concern about creating greater use by creating the legalization. There's also concern about having the cart before the horse, because what Senate Bill 1556 does is says, voters, do you want to legalize it, and then we'll figure out how to regulate it, rather than saying, here's how we can effectively regulate it and deal with the unintended adverse consequences. So let me tell you quickly about a couple of those consequences with a short story. In 1987, I was a fairly new district attorney, and it was a Sunday afternoon at 4:30 on a four-lane highway driving a borrowed pickup truck with my 6 or 7 year old son in the vehicle when I was rear-ended by an intoxicated driver. Turns out that lady had THC in her system in addition to alcohol. She was convicted. I was in pain. I'm now a believer in whiplash. I was in pain for a year. Numerous physical therapy sessions. My son had a concussion. None of us wants intoxicated drivers out there on the highway. The preliminary data, and I call it preliminary data, summarized in a January 27, 2014 letter from the Governor's Advisory Committee on DUII to Heidi Moad, basically says in Colorado and in Washington that there's increased intoxicated driving with increased access to the marijuana, and specifically intoxicated driving using marijuana. And that letter is certainly available. I can send it to Mr. Taylor to send around to all of you, so I won't go through that. The other thing I want to talk about is children. Everybody's concerned about children, and the district attorneys are no exception there. And what's the impact on children with more use available or with marijuana with easier access? I'm sitting here looking at a former high school principal, and everybody's concerned about kids. And the answer is that those THC-infused products are marketed towards children. So my wife, who's a board-certified psychiatric nurse, has spent many, many years analyzing drugs and what they do, as she's seen patients in our psych hospital attached to our jail and our psych hospital at the hospital. The other night she hands me an article, Seven Advances in Schizophrenia, January 16, 2014. I can send you the site on that as well. On page 3 it says, when increasing decriminalization of both medicinal and recreational marijuana in the United States, the possible link between cannabis and psychosis is more salient than ever. Past research has reported a significantly higher risk of developing future psychotic symptoms in marijuana users, and further that in those who had experienced an episode of cannabis-induced psychosis, there was a 21% to 46% risk of subsequently receiving a schizophrenia diagnosis. So there's lots of medical research out there. This scared me, frankly. So it seems, representing the district attorneys, like you should put the regulations together before you ask the voters to approve the legalization of marijuana. Thank you.
We'd like to go next.
My name is Madison Hades. I am a medical marijuana user. I'm a legal medical marijuana user. The age 12 and a half years old, I broke my back. I have a broken vertebrae and 3 herniated discs, and I was not... No doctor in Salem or Portland would approve to see me, and I was put on Oxy, Percocet, Vicodin, and morphine with no problems. Those are all legal. If I overdosed on those, I could either die or be in the hospital in a vegetated state. But one day as a teenager, I seeked out marijuana because I heard it had good effects for people that, you know, have health issues, and it had an immense... You know, just it changed my whole perspective on it.
Madison, I just stop you for a second? Because your testimony seems to be maybe more geared to the other bill that we're hearing, 1531 on the medical, as compared to 1556 would be permitting adult use of marijuana.
Yeah, I was going to get to that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I just want to make sure you're testifying on the bill that you intended to testify on.
No, yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I was just going to say that I had to deal with that for 6 years, and I'm 20 now, and it blows my mind that, you know, I'm just trying to put a little perspective in people that don't have a medical marijuana card, but there are kids that are younger than I am that have a lot worse issues, and I just think that it should be, if, you know, the parents are approving of it and it's regulated and it's controlled, that kids that do have issues worse than I should have access to it. that's what I was going to go for, because, I mean, I didn't like coughing up blood or anything like that from pills, and okay. It could have been a lot different for me.
What I'm going to do is, just for the record, I'm going to incorporate your testimony into 1536, okay. Or excuse me, 1531, because it seems like it's more germane to the issues around medical marijuana, and what I'm hearing is that you believe that some youth through parental control should be able to have access through that if a physician has determined that it's appropriate?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry. Thank you very much. No, that's fine. Thank you very much for coming forward. Daryl?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Daryl Fuller on behalf of the Oregon State Sheriff's Association, along with the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police, we have submitted some written testimony, so I'll make my testimony this morning very brief. I'll make 2 points. One, Oregon sheriffs oppose the legalization of marijuana, whether it's through the initiative process or whether it's through a legislative process. We simply do not believe that legalizing marijuana is the right direction for the state of Oregon to go. The second point I'll make is that as we debate the issue of the legalization of marijuana, the sheriffs oppose a legislative referral simply because we believe it adds the color of support, if you will, of the state of Oregon on the referral. We believe that a legislative referral will impact the voters, not because if the intent is to ask the voters a question, we believe that it's, if you will, push-pulling by providing legislative support of the referral. We believe that that will have an impact on voters that would increase the likelihood of passing a legalization of marijuana, which we fundamentally oppose. So we oppose the bill, and we will actively oppose an initiative that does the same. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Doug, can I ask one question?
Sure.
As the position of ODAA, it sounds like ODAA thinks that the legislature should actually put forward the completed, let's say, regulated bill, and then ask the voters to say up or down on whatever they felt the legislature felt would be the appropriate regulations for adult use of marijuana?
Yeah. If that's the Senator Przanski, members of the committee, if that's the conclusion you reach from my comments weren't very clear. They are opposed to the legalization of marijuana, period. Okay. The comment was directed at 1556, saying it's got the cart before the horse, and that's a reason why it should not move forward. But it was not a comment that was designed to say, if you did that, the district attorneys, if you put all the regulations together first, it was not a comment designed to say that district attorneys would support moving that forward to the voters.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much. Our next panel is going to be, I'm going to call out one more time, Anthony Taylor. I've got Mark McDonald. And I think that's, and I assume Sarah Duff will be here. Ms. Duff, you didn't check. I'm assuming you're for based on your other comment for the other bill?
Correct.
Okay. So why don't we do these two? We have only a couple more, then we'll go right back to 1531. We may fit, be able to finish on time. Mark, did you want to start off?
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, my name is Mark McDonald. I have worked as a prosecutor for 32 years. I retired approximately 18 months ago. For the last 15 years of my career, I ran the drug unit in Multnomah County. Myself and Mr. Norm Frank, who was the former chief deputy, support the bill conditionally. We think it's defective in that it authorizes legalization before a regulatory system has been established. So we give conditional support if the date would be moved back sometime in 2015 after the legislative session has completed, to give the legislature a chance to come up with a more detailed policy. Mr. Frank and I have worked with Mr. Anthony Johnston and his group. We've met with them several times, trying to come up with a a reasonable petition. It's our position that public opinion is such, and it's moving in the direction of support, that it's highly likely in the next election in November that Oregon voters will adopt one of the two petitions that have been submitted and will likely make the ballot. We believe both of those petitions are inadequate to protect the public, in particular minors. You've heard a lot of testimony about the known effects on minors. So what we would ask the legislature to do would to develop a very strictly controlled system analogous to OLCC. We would also ask that whatever policy adopted by the legislature, that it prohibit private grows for recreational use. If what we're trying to do is eliminate the black market to limit access to minors, it seems essential that private grows for recreational use not be allowed. We'd also ask that the committee reconsider the issue as to forfeiture in really egregious cases where there's very large grows. It would seem that forfeiture would still be appropriate. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And Sarah, before you start, Chris Owen, if you're in the room, why don't you come on up, because that will conclude everyone that signed up for this bill. Sarah?
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, my name is Sarah Duff. I'm from Portland. I believe legalization is a much better policy than prohibition. If you believe in medical marijuana, then you should believe in legalization because it's better for patients. All patients start out as illegal users, and that's not fair to them. It's a very expensive process. Getting your card and having to renew it every year is also very difficult, especially for people that have a hard time moving. If you are afraid of mass access to marijuana, which would come from marijuana stores of any kind, then you would end prohibition. Marijuana is much more accessible when it's in the black market and when the black market thrives. For that reason, I believe that the devil is in the details on this bill, and I do support the bill, but I am afraid for what the sales will end up looking like, and I realize that that is a topic for another time. But I do urge everyone to try to end the black market, and to do that, you would have to provide for a lot, or allow for a lot of people to provide for a lot of stores. And if you limit those numbers, then that makes it where not as many people can have access, and it would push up the prices. It makes the black market thrive. So I urge everyone to consider maybe putting the regulations that are in the New Approach Oregon legalization bill. That is the one that I support the most. But I will support this bill. I hope that you all consider putting in regulations that we can vote on for the sales. Thank you.
Mayor, thank you. Chris?
Chairman Przanski, members of the committee, thank you. I'm a deputy district attorney with the Clackamas County DA's office. The Clackamas County DA's office does not support this bill. We believe current penalties associated with the sales and distribution of marijuana are very even-handed. As well as the decriminalization of personal possession up to an ounce. With that being said, if the legislature is going to get involved in making a proposal to voters, we would urge the legislature to put a lot more thought into what they are submitting to voters. As written, it appears 1556 gives the legislature really a very short window of time to devise a well-thought-out regulatory system, as well as reconfiguring significant aspects of the criminal code pertaining to penalties with the distribution of marijuana. So It's just kind of a two-point comment. One, we do not support this bill, but if the legislature is going to get involved, it needs to be much better thought out. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Mark, just one point that you made about if someone had a large grow operation, if it's outside of whatever the personal use amounts would be, it seemed like that would still fall under, and what I would expect it to fall under, criminal law, and that you would, in fact, be able to have a forfeiture based on them being in violation of criminal law with the nexus of a conviction.
Well, maybe I misread the measure. That's not the interpretation that I got from it.
Would you please look at it again at some point, and then we can talk about it offline? All right, thank you very much. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on 1556. I'm going to go ahead and reopen the public hearing on 1531. And I have the following individuals, Lee Berger, and I believe it's Compliance, and I cannot read the last name.
Oregon.
Oh, okay.
Cannabis.
All right, so that's Lee, and then I have Denise Concannon and Bill Kirby. And what I'm going to do is, Bill, I'm going to take your testimony first, since you are for the bill, and then the others that we still have left are opponents.
Chair Przanski and members of the committee, thank you very much for holding this hearing today. It's been informative just listening to the various viewpoints, and I appreciate that opportunity. And I have some comments, and I'd also like to try to address some of the points that I've heard as the hearing's gone on, and just give you a view from my standpoint. I'm the city attorney for the city of Beaverton. You've heard a little bit about Beaverton today from Sam, who was at the hearing a week ago. And I'm here today to speak out on behalf of Senate Bill 1531. And I prepared some materials, and it's essentially a legal memorandum, and it's meant to be read side by side with Legislative Council's legal memorandum. On page 4 of that legal memorandum from Legislative Council, there's a paragraph that says specifically we are not considering, and they describe what they're not considering. And I think you need to consider that, because that's where you end up with the Emerald Steel Fabricators case, and you end up with some very complex issues with federal law and how it interacts with state law. So it's not news, but lawyers don't always agree on the law, and currently some confusion has been created by Legislative Council on the legal authority that local governments have together with the state to regulate medical marijuana. And Senate Bill 1531 would help address that situation and clarify what the law is. The written materials I've submitted explain my understanding of the law regarding local regulation of medical marijuana facilities. It's deep in preemption law. I've practiced municipal law for 30 years, and I think I know that area of the law very, very well. It is a complex area, and I understand that other lawyers' analysis of the situations is different than mine. I don't have we haven't reached the same conclusion. And I think that Senate Bill 1531 would help clarify that situation, and that's why we need it. Now, I'm not asking you to rule as if you were judges and make a decision on which brief is best. I really think you need to step back, and you need to look at the policy. And now, when you step back and you look at Oregon's policy, it's really clear that when it comes to medical marijuana, the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act is clearly states what our policy is. When you look then at the Fed side, it's really confusing, because you have the Controlled Substances Act, which is a law, and it's the law of the land, and courts have said that it applies, and marijuana is a Schedule I drug, and marijuana has, according to the federal government, no medicinal value whatsoever, period, none, end of discussion. But when you look at the policy as opposed to the law, you know things have changed, because you know you've heard about the Cole Memorandum. The Cole Memorandum is the memorandum that is this administration's interpretation, or guidelines is what they call them, in terms of how they're going to enforce the Controlled Substances Act with regard to states that have enacted things like medical marijuana laws or recreational use laws. First thing I want to make sure you understand is guidelines aren't law. This administration has one view, another administration can have a different view, and they need to do nothing more than change their guidelines. So you could imagine a more conservative administration coming in and saying, we're not going to tolerate this experiment that's occurring at the state level with the legalization of marijuana. So the Cole Memorandum allows some dispensaries to operate, but it also cautions that, and I'm going to read a paragraph, the department's guidance in this memorandum rests on its expectation that states and local governments that have enacted laws authorizing marijuana-related conduct will implement strong and effective regulatory and enforcement systems that will address the threat these states' marijuana legalization laws pose to public health and safety. That's essentially what it says on page, I think it's two of the memorandum, about halfway down. In other words, state and local governments need to have strong and effective regulatory enforcement systems in place if marijuana legalization is going to be tolerated by the federal government. Maybe not this administration, but the next administration. If this experiment that is going on in terms of legalization of marijuana starts to go off the rails, the federal government's going to come in and shut it down. That's the risk that I think you have to look at as from a policy standpoint. How do we make sure that this experiment in Oregon with legalization of marijuana works safely and effectively so that we don't capture the attention of the federal government and have them enforcing laws and shutting down the program entirely? Because they have the authority to do that. The Controlled Substances Act says marijuana is a Schedule I drug, marijuana has no medicinal value whatsoever, and it is a crime to manufacture it, distribute it, dispense it. It's illegal. It's being tolerated right now, and you just need to make sure that you set up a system that allows for this program to continue to exist. If you start from that standpoint and you look at, okay, so what policies do we need to put in place? I think that allowing local governments to be included in the local regulation of medical marijuana is one of the best ways the state can assure its marijuana legalization program is a success and not a failure. Sure, some cities will prohibit, ban marijuana in their jurisdictions. I think that that's, we shouldn't overlook that possibility. We'll talk to Senator Roblin's concern about how those people in those cities would access medical marijuana if they needed it. But other cities are clearly willing to embrace the experiment. Portland, Multnomah County, Eugene, Ashland, others. Other cities like Beaverton, I don't speak for the city council of Beaverton, but on my observations, and you can ask, you know, people that were there at the meeting that saw it too, it wasn't a, we need to ban this substance, we need to get rid of this. It was a, what is this issue? The administrative rules came into place on January 15th, and this program is going to set up on March 1st. Let's get our head around what's going on here. Let's try to study the issue. Let's make it possible, I heard some counselors say, that people that need to access medical marijuana have the ability to access medical marijuana in a legal fashion. So you can call the city of Beaverton undecided, you can call it on the fence, but in reality, it's a very thoughtful decision-making process that's going on. It's a bit rushed, but that's the thoughtful decision-making process that's going on.
Bill, I need you to kind of wrap up. I've got another panel after this.
If you allow local communities to tailor this program to local conditions, it's less likely those opposed to the program will go about complaining about the law. I think you'll have better relations with the federal government, and the program will be a success. If I can indulge you for a minute. Senator Roblin, there's delivery of medical marijuana. That is in existence now. You can go on the websites and you can find people that will deliver marijuana to you. So if you lived in a city that didn't allow for dispensaries, you might be able to have someone deliver it right to your door. With regard to drugs that are regulated, I would point to tobacco. Beaverton has tobacco ordinances that talk about how you dispense tobacco and how it can't be dispensed to minors. We came in underneath the preemption law that came into effect after we had enacted our local ordinances, but it was local ordinances that were essentially in this time, place, and manner kind of concept of how are we going to regulate the dispensing of tobacco at stores.
Bill?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Lee?
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, my name is Leland Berger. I'm a lawyer. I've been practicing since April of 1983. In December of last year, I formed a LLC called Oregon Cannabis Compliance Council. As prohibition is ending, my practice is shifting away from criminal defense and towards advising cannabis businesses. When you've heard today that there's a likelihood of litigation, that litigation involves my clients, and particularly in Phoenix and Medford. I wanted to talk about a bunch of things. The reason that it's not regulated like a pharmacy is because it's not a pharmaceutical. It's a non-toxic herbal remedy. And when I say it's a non-toxic herbal remedy, it's not just me saying that. This spring it became a part of the herbal pharmacopoeia, and it's not the least regulated system in the country. There's 24 pages of difficult to work through regulations about the distribution of medical marijuana under 3460, one of which is in the process of being resolved, had to do with whether the mold testing was going to be relying on the USP or the American herbal pharmacopoeia. And it is going to be relying on the American herbal pharmacopoeia because it's a non-toxic herbal remedy that's in the herbal pharmacopoeia. The city attorneys that I've spoken with, certainly in Medford and Phoenix, explain that, and you've heard from Mr. Sugarman that, and from the League of Cities, that the problem is that 3460 didn't include allowing reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions. And notwithstanding Mr. Chapman's interpretation, there's a concern about whether they have that authority at all. If you wanted to move something forward, a good thing to move forward would be something that clarifies that, and using the language from the GMO bill, something that clarifies this other issue about that there can't be any moratoria. The city attorneys are relying as a legal matter on a case from 1965 that allows cities to ban wrecking yards where there is, and I haven't seen the Beaverton city attorney's memo, but I'm assuming he relies on this. One of the things they rely on is that. The other thing they rely on is that there has to be express language that says you can't prohibit it unless like there is in the GMO bill. So if you were going to move this bill forward, the way to do that would be to amend it to include that municipalities are allowed to do to impose a reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions, but that they're not allowed to ban or exclude. Because it's not a public safety issue. Let me repeat that again. It's not a public safety issue. It's a health issue. The issue for medical marijuana dispensaries is safe access. I've been to Myrtle Creek. I've been on that road. I was unaware that there was a facility there, but if there is a facility there, it would be as others have testified. No entry even into the lobby is allowed unless you are a cardholder and have a state-issued identification. There's a sign on the door that says minors aren't allowed in. There's a sign on the medicated edible products that are distributed, the rules require there be a sign not for use by children on it, that it be labeled in that fashion. So these things have all been taken care of. When I say there's no relationship between, when I say that this is a public safety issue and not a crime issue, I'm referencing Mr. Sugarman's comments about how there's a RAND study and a study from UCLA. The UCLA study, responding to Senator Close's request for specific citations, is entitled Exploring the Ecological Association Between Crime and Medical Marijuana Dispensaries. It's found in the Journal of Studies on Alcohol and Drugs in the July 2012 issue. It concludes that consistent with previous work, variables measuring routine activities at ecological level were related to crime. There were no observed cross-sectional associations between the density of medical marijuana dispensaries and either violent or property crimes in this study. The same was true of the RAND study that Mr. Lee.
I need you to wrap up. I got one more panel, and I'm going to lose numbers.
When I say that the cities can't do this, it's not just me saying this. On Thursday last, the Supreme Court of Michigan said so in Terbeek versus the City of Wyoming. Ordinarily, a sister state's conclusion wouldn't be compelling here. However, the Michigan Medical Marijuana Act is premised on the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act. The Emerald Steel only prohibits use. That's the only preemption that's involved there. It's not true that cities aren't trying to deal with gardens, that the city of Irigan banned medical marijuana gardens. The city of Carlton tried to. There's a bill pending in, or a thing pending in Phoenix. And the very last thing I want to tell you is this. When we speak about local control, and when we speak about the need of or the ability of those closest to the people to be responsive to what the people said, the situation here is most closely analogous to those municipalities which didn't understand why they had to shut down the two water fountains, one for whites and one for coloreds, and only allow one for everybody. It's not about law. It's not about policy. It's not about a concern for children. It's not about driving under the influence. It's about bigotry. It's about those who oppose what we're doing in cannabis policy in this state.
Thank you.
That's all I have. Thank you so much, Chair.
All right. Our last panel is going to be Denise Concannon, Christopher Oss, Sarah Dubb, if y'all still want to testify. All right, who's first?
All right, Chair and everyone from the committee, thank you again for letting me speak. My name is Sarah Duff. I'm from Portland. I have patients in all parts of the state because there are not enough growers in Oregon to support all of the patients that we have. There's always a long list. I've tried to help as many as I can outside of Portland. It's very difficult for me to get to them. But we do what we can, and I can't visit them in the middle of the month if they need something, so they need a place to go. It is not fair to say that because there are delivery services that we don't need to have dispensaries in every part of the state. I believe it would be delaying the inevitable if we do not have these stores in all parts of the state, and it doesn't seem to make sense. I do not agree with the amendment that would include preschools. I don't think any 3-year-old is going to remember seeing a dispensary and using that as an excuse for why they're using marijuana at a young age. I think it is time that we come to terms with the fact that marijuana is here to stay and that we need to regulate it in all parts of the state and see how our regulations work. Thank you.
Thank you. And our last witness today is going to be Christopher Oss.
Thank you for allowing me to speak. My concerns is about how much money existing clubs at the present time have spent to comply with House Bill 3460 and how it will cripple them and the patients that use them. This is not fair to the people that have been in compliance and fully willing to follow House Bill 3460. Simply allowing oversight and possible city or county fees to open would be a lot better option than sending my grandmother to the skate park to get laced marijuana as medicine. Banning will only strengthen the black market, as pointed out by a few people tonight. Under House Bill 3460, growers can profit and sell their medicine, and I believe it is better for communities to have it sold in regulated facilities instead of Fred Meyer's parking lot and in your neighborhoods. Senate Bill 1531 would kill jobs, about 525 in Portland alone and about 100 to 150 in Salem. We have a member that has to pay $178 for medical transport to travel from the city of Dallas to Salem in order to obtain medicine because he's paralyzed and has to take medical transport. By the time he pays for a ride, he has no money left from his Social Security check to get medicine. We have to give it to him, which we're happy to do. It is inhuman to make someone in this situation pay that much and travel that far. This bill will make people like Richard suffer because they refuse to use Western medicine that kills 100,000 people a year from FDA-approved prescription drugs. Legalization is imminent, and giving the cities and counties power to ban facilities will only strengthen legalization efforts, which will allow them in every city and county as well. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't think I see any questions. Thank you all very much. I want to thank everyone who came out this morning to give testimony on the two bills that we've had, Senate Bill 1531 and Senate Bill 1556. I'm closing the public hearing on 1531. We've already closed the public hearing on 1536. And at this point, I will be carrying over both of those bills, Senate Bill 1531 as well as 1556. That's 1556, till tomorrow for possible work sessions. And I just asked Jessica and I asked Mr. Taylor, is there anything else that we need to do? We've already taken care of 1536. It's been passed out. And we had the other bill that was originally scheduled, 1580, was pulled from the agenda based on the request of the sponsor of that bill. So with that, I believe we've taken care of everything with the continuation or carryover of 1531 and 1556 until tomorrow for possible work sessions. We're concluded.